This morning, America's first news starts right after this.
Great news. There's a quick way you could save money. Switch to Geico. Geico could help you get great coverage at a great price, and it only takes 15 minutes to see if you could save 15% or more on car insurance. Go to geico.com today and see how much you could save.
From Compass Media Networks, this is America's First News. This morning with your host, Gordon Deal.
Kilauea blows. Good morning, I'm Gordon Deal, along with Jennifer Koschenka on this Friday, May 4th. Glad you could be with us, and here's what we have for you this hour.
The active volcano on the island of Hawaii sent lava into a residential area yesterday, forcing thousands to evacuate.
For the fourth time in recent weeks, the Chinese military has been accused of harassing American airmen in the skies over East Africa with a laser.
Democrats are hopeful they can retake the House this November, but they're less hopeful about having Nancy Pelosi as one of their leaders.
And prepare your goodbyes for those tiny hotel shampoo bottles.
Hotels are finding that bulk dispensers mounted on the walls of showers are cheaper. They can actually put higher quality product in there. And they are so much better for the environment.
Wall Street Journal travel writer Scott McCartney on another amenity disappearing from hotel rooms. He's here in about 20 minutes. Thousands of people have been evacuated on the Big Island of Hawaii after the Kilauea volcano erupted and sent red lava into a residential neighborhood. Hawaiian County Civil Defense said steam and lava poured out of a crack in Leilani Estates, which is near the town of Pahoa on the eastern side of the Big Island. Hawaii News Now reports that residents in the Puna community of about 10,000 were told to evacuate. Officials are going door to door urging residents to flee with help from the National Guard. Stephen Clapper is one of those who's relocated to a shelter.
I ran in, I grabbed the dogs, threw them in a crate, put them in the car, went in my room, just grabbed up an armload of clothes, and here we are. Yeah. And we moved from California to get away from forest fires.
Imagine that. A plume of ash has been reported in the vicinity of Pahoa. The Pacific Tsunami Warning Center reported a 4.6 magnitude earthquake yesterday off the south flank of the volcano. The U.S. Geological Survey reported that there were nearly 70 earthquakes of magnitude 2.5 or stronger from Tuesday into Wednesday. New comments by President Trump and his lawyer about hush money paid to a woman who says she had an affair with Mr. Trump raise questions about possible campaign finance violations. The Wall Street Journal says the core legal question remains whether the payment of $130,000 just before the election to adult film actress Stephanie Clifford was related primarily to the election or rather to reputational issues that would have occurred even without a candidacy. On Wednesday, attorney Rudy Giuliani said the payment that Mr. Trump's personal lawyer made to Ms. Clifford violated no laws because it was part of Michael Cohen's routine legal work for Mr. Trump and because Mr. Trump reimbursed Mr. Cohen. He was on Fox again yesterday.
She was alleging, although there's the contrary letter that she signed, that it never happened, that there was a one-time affair. And I think when Cohen heard $130,000, he said, my God, this is cheap. They come cheap. Let me get the thing signed up and signed off.
Mr. Trump's tweets yesterday acknowledged the payment, saying it was intended to, quote, stop the false and extortionist accusations. New show of harassment by Chinese military personnel of American military pilots in Africa. The Pentagon says the Chinese are using high-powered lasers targeting flight crews in the skies over the East African nation of Djibouti. The Wall Street Journal says the incidents bolster long-standing U.S. concerns about China's decision to establish its first overseas military outpost close to the largest U.S. military base in Africa. The encounters also underscore growing concerns about Beijing's steady rise as a military power. Here's Pentagon spokeswoman Dana White.
We have formally demarched the Chinese government, and we've requested that the Chinese investigate these incidents.
Chinese officials said they are looking into the matter. Meanwhile, Chinese officials in the past have complained about foreign military reconnaissance planes flying over China's Djibouti outpost. The new signs of military tension also come as U.S.-China economic relations have sunk to their lowest point in decades. It's 11 minutes now after the hour on This Morning, America's First News. Glad you're with us. Welcome into Friday. Democrats sense a growing opportunity to unseat Republicans as part of a national wave that could put the House Speaker's gavel back in their party's hands. There's just one catch here, though. Many Democratic contenders aren't willing to say they support returning Nancy Pelosi to power. It's a story by Paul Kane, senior congressional correspondent at The Washington Post. Paul, what are you hearing?
You've got a lot of candidates around the country who are running in Republican-held seats, and while Donald Trump is pretty unpopular in a lot of those seats, they realize that Nancy Pelosi herself is not so popular. What you had in southwestern Pennsylvania back in March was that the candidate Connor Lamb actually openly came out and said, "You know, look, I'm not gonna vote for Nancy Pelosi under any circumstances." Mm. That was the farthest you've really seen a candidate go, and he won. And so you've got some other candidates around the country who are starting to say the same things. And certainly there are others that are sort of distancing themselves from Pelosi and the entire leadership of 70-somethings here. They're talking about sort of a new generation of leadership that's needed as a way to try to sort of inoculate themselves from the incoming attacks from Republicans as sort of clones of Nancy Pelosi. Mm.
She's described in your story as a deeply polarizing figure used by Republicans as a club against Democrats.
Mm-hmm.
But she can fundraise, right?
She can fundraise, and also over the years, over the last 8 years, she's grown. She hasn't grown more popular, but she's grown less unpopular.
Okay.
She's sort of she can raise tons of money. She can hit the circuit. She still has a liberal base of supporters who will write checks for her for the Democratic Campaign Committee. And you know, when you look at the polling of late, she's not as polarizing as she once was, certainly back in 2010 when she was the Speaker. So it presents this sort of awkward dance where they really want her support, her financial support, but they just sort of don't want her too involved in the campaign directly.
Wow. What does she say about this?
You know what? Pelosi sort of has basically reached a point of defiance. You know, she says she's in charge, and she has no doubt that if they win the majority, that she'll be able to get enough votes to become Speaker. It's this strange vote where, you know, every other leadership position in the House and Senate is just an internal secret ballot by the caucuses. The House Speaker is the one leadership position that is a constitutional office, and the entire House has to vote for it. So you have to get the votes all from your side of the aisle. So if there are 20 or so Connor Lambs who refuse to vote for her, you get into this weird situation where she might not have enough support. But Pelosi says that that's not going to be the case. She's not concerned. She doesn't care if people out there like Connor Lamb say they're not going to vote for her, because she just wants them to do whatever they can to win.
Hmm. We're speaking with Paul Kane, senior congressional reporter at The Washington Post. His piece is called "Democrats Bullish on Winning the House, but Not Sold on Pelosi as Speaker." As we get closer to the midterms, are we going to see ads, political ads, that say, don't vote for this candidate because he or she is aligned with Pelosi, and or don't vote for this candidate because he or she is aligned with Trump? Is it going to be one of those elections?
You're going to see a lot of that. You're going to see a lot of that on both sides of the aisle. Now, on the Democratic side, where they're going to be, you know, punching up and trying to tell people that these Republican incumbents are Trump clones, they've already decided that you're not going to see them like bringing up Stormy Daniels or any of the personal behavior. Mm. What they're going to try to do is paint the Barbara Comstocks of the world, the Republican from Northern Virginia, as somebody who is supporting the Trump tax cut plan, and say that they're in this just for trying to benefit Donald Trump's rich corporate cronies. Mm. They're not going to try to do the personal stuff and tie that to the candidates, because they've just discovered that that doesn't work.
Thanks, Paul. Paul Kane, senior congressional correspondent at The Washington Post. It is 21 minutes after the hour on This Morning. Jennifer Koschenka is here with more of America's First News.
Gordon, at least 1,800 people in Hawaii have been ordered to evacuate because of an erupting volcano. No injuries have been reported so far, and no homes have been destroyed, but a subdivision road and some heavily forested private property have been damaged. This resident's home is in the evacuation zone.
It's right there behind our house. We could hear this lava exploding right from the house.
Hawaii Governor David Ige has activated the state's National Guard to help with evacuations and security. President Trump insists his reimbursement of a 2016 hush payment to porn actress Stormy Daniels had nothing to do with his election campaign. But the surprise revelation of the president's payment clashes with his past statements, creates new legal headaches, and stunned many in the West Wing. White House aides were blindsided when Trump's recently added attorney Rudy Giuliani said Wednesday night that the president had repaid Michael Cohen for $130,000. It was given to Daniels to keep her quiet before the election about her allegations of an affair with Trump. White House Press Secretary Sarah Sanders says Trump recently found out about the payment.
This was information that the president didn't know at the time, but eventually learned.
While Giuliani says the payment to Daniels is going to turn out to be perfectly legal, legal experts say the new information raises a number of new legal questions. Treasury Secretary Steven Mnuchin says the U.S. trade delegation to China has been having very good conversations. A breakthrough deal to fundamentally change China's economic policies is viewed as highly unlikely during the two-day visit, though a package of short-term Chinese measures could delay a U.S. decision to impose tariffs on about $50 billion worth of Chinese exports. Hundreds of thousands of Arizona school children are heading back to class now that the legislature has passed an education funding deal that gives teachers a raise and ends a six-day teacher walkout. State Senate President Steve Yarbrough.
I think it is a extraordinarily significant amount of increased funding, which hopefully will make for happier teachers.
Some schools will reopen today. Others will remain closed. Who knew there was a video game Hall of Fame? Well, there is one. And among the 2018 inductees is John Madden Football. Other honorees include Space War, Tomb Raiders, and Final Fantasy VII.
There's so many buttons right now on something like the Xbox, which my son plays.
Okay.
I can't even begin to compete.
Oh, you like, do? You try?
I mean, I tried once.
Oh.
And then and I got slaughtered in like FIFA.
You need more
you know,
than 2017. One try at it.
Just frustrating. Thank you, Jen. That ship sailed with Atari like in the early 80s or whatever. 23 minutes after the hour on This Morning, America's First News. Welcome into Friday. Those little bottles of shampoo, conditioner, and body wash in hotels, icons of travel, right, are disappearing, replaced by bulk dispensers mounted on shower walls. And as Wall Street Journal travel columnist Scott McCartney says, some travelers are in a lather. Scott, got to be disappointing to many.
Well, disappoint many and also please many, it turns out.
Okay.
It's been an interesting reaction to the story. But what's happening is hotels are finding that bulk dispensers mounted on the walls of showers are cheaper. They can actually put a higher quality product in there. And they are so much better for the environment. They're throwing away millions and millions of little bottles of shampoo, conditioner, and body wash.
Oh.
And it's become, you know, a concern, a problem. And Marriott is switching five of its brands to the wall-mounted dispensers. They already have a couple doing it. Intercontinental Hotel Group, a huge chain, is switching four of its brands. The Kimpton, a high-end brand, is already doing big bottles in the shower. So I think it's kind of the start of the end of the little tiny, fraction of an ounce shampoo bottle.
Wow. So you're getting, for the dispensers that are in the shower, are you getting three, like a body wash plus hair shampoo and hair conditioner?
Yes, in most places. Now some places in other parts of the world. I've actually gone to one, sort of an all-purpose soap wash thing. And from the travelers who pointed that out to me, they really don't like that.
Yeah.
Typically what you get are sort of a locked dispenser. Sabotage is one issue with this. But it's a lock dispenser with three bottles in it. They're clearly marked. One of the issues with the little bottles is if you take them to the shower and you don't have your glasses on, they can be hard to read and figure out which one is which. They're, you know, larger, 8 ounces and higher, so that the housekeeping staff doesn't have to refill them every day.
Oh, how about that? Wow. What about so for the dispensers then? What about the running out issue?
Yeah, that's a complaint that we hear from a lot of travelers. It's this is a maintenance issue. Travelers say they get in the shower and the bottle's empty, and then you're really stuck, right?
Man. Yeah.
So it's one of the knocks on the bulk dispensers.
Wall Street Journal travel writer Scott McCartney. 30 minutes now after the hour on This Morning, America's First News. If you were fumbling around in the dark and someone handed you a flashlight, you'd take it, right? Nobody wants to be left in the dark, but shouldn't it be the same when it comes to spotting threats to your identity and the data on your devices? The digital world is so full of connections, it may only take one weak link for criminals to get in. Fortunately, new LifeLock identity theft protection now adds the power of Norton Security to shed light on more of today's threats. Threats to your identity, like your personal info for sale on the dark web, and threats to your computer or tablet, like ransomware or emerging viruses. Of course, no one can stop every cyber threat, prevent all identity theft, or monitor all transactions at all businesses. But new LifeLock with Norton detects a wide range of threats to your identity and devices that you may not see on your own. Join now and get an additional 10% off your first year. Just go to LifeLock.com and enter the promo code Gordon. That's promo code Gordon at LifeLock.com for an additional 10% off.
America's First News is online all the time. Follow us on Twitter at This Morning Show, like us on Facebook, or send us an email, thismorning@compassmedianetworks.com.
Thanks for being with us. Gordon Deal, Jennifer Koschenka, Friday, May 4th. May the 4th be with you. Some of our top stories and headlines. The Kilauea volcano forces evacuations in Hawaii. Chinese military accused of pointing a laser at U.S. airmen in the skies over East Africa. California Congressman Tony Cardenas is being accused of sexually abusing a teenage girl. A New Jersey high school superintendent has been issued citations, get this, for repeatedly pooping on a high school track during morning runs. The NRA holds its annual meeting this weekend in Dallas, and the new trend in the NFL draft. We'll have that story in about 15 minutes. The April jobs report will be out today from the Department of Labor. A preview now from Mark Hamrick, senior economic analyst at Bankrate.com. Mark, what do you expect?
Well, we think this should be a report that tells us that the U.S. economy is continuing to grow. It has been interesting. Over the past 6 months, we've had the unemployment rate essentially stuck at 4.1%. And so, obviously, there's a chance that that continues to be the case. Perhaps it could go a little lower, or I'd be surprised it could go a little higher. I think the most important thing, though, is that we probably will continue to see hiring close to the average over the previous 3 months, which would put it right around 200,000. By and large, the economy seems to be doing just fine. If anything, many employers are reporting they're having some difficulty finding the qualified workers that they want. But the other part is that we have seen, let's say since the beginning of the year, more people coming in off the sidelines, so to speak, people that previously hadn't been looking for work. And so to some extent, that frees up some available workers there too. And of course, obviously also, month of May, which we're currently in, not the month that we'll have the employment report covering, but we'll have college commencement ceremonies all across the country, and so there you'll have available workers coming in as well.
Mm. So you referenced it a little bit. What about the number of people coming back into the workforce here?
Well, we don't really look for that to significantly change. If it did change in the sense of more people looking for work, I think that would be almost surprising. I mean, the biggest dynamic, or among the biggest dynamics with respect to what you just asked about, is the fact that we have retiring baby boomers, and that demographic really can't be disrupted. So the other part is obviously you have younger workers piling in behind them. And that feeds into the wage growth question, too, because very often those younger workers are not going to be paid as much as their older counterparts. That is a powerful dynamic in the economy with retirees obviously moving out of the workforce.
Mm. Are we seeing any sort of, I don't know, delayed reaction, or maybe it's normal reaction to the tax cuts and potential tariffs here?
Well, I think obviously one is a headwind and the other is a tailwind, meaning that obviously the tax cut is meant to be and appears to be a benefit for the economy in the near term, not necessarily in the long term. The threat of tariffs, by and large, is almost universally negative, and where tariffs could be imposed, that's even a bigger problem. Obviously, as we speak, we have the negotiations ongoing with China, and the risk is, in a positive way, that we could have some benefit there in the sense of industries gaining additional business coming from China or more demand from China. But the other part is that China might then figure out other ways to make up for it. And so whether that might be less investment in U.S. Treasury bonds or less business either with the United States elsewhere, in other words, in different sectors or with other trading partners. So that's a big wild card. I think this is one of the reasons why the stock market hasn't been acting particularly well lately. One could argue that's been overdue anyway. But I think with so many uncertainties facing business as well as the economy, it makes it harder for business leaders to have confidence when federal policy is in some ways negative now.
Thanks, Mark. Mark Hamrick, Senior Economic Analyst at Bankrate.com. Reminder, by the way, that we can connect on social media. You can friend us on Facebook. You can follow us on Twitter with the username @ThisMorningShow. You can follow me directly on Twitter as well with the username @GordonDeal. It is 21 minutes now in front of the hour on This Morning, America's First News. Thanks for being with us. Baseball trouble in Florida when the newly christened Tampa Bay Devil Rays started selling tickets for their 1998 debut season. They threw a party outside their St. Petersburg ballpark with players on hand to greet fans and sign autographs. A lot of hype, right? But they sold out exactly one game. About 15 years later, the Miami Marlins finally built a stadium after a long battle, signing a crop of big-name free agents to mark the occasion. Then tickets went on sale, and the Marlins did not fill the seats for their series against the Boston Red Sox, an opponent with large support in South Florida. Wall Street Journal national baseball writer Jared Diamond says the 25-year baseball experiment in Florida has not gone according to plan. Jared, not good news.
No, it's not. And now baseball has been in the state of Florida for 25 years. Came to Miami in 1993, went to Tampa Bay area in 1998, and it has been essentially a failure from a business standpoint for that entire time. Both teams have struggled to draw fans for virtually their entire existence. They have not done all that well on the field either in most of their seasons, and it sort of raised questions about whether baseball can survive in Florida, a state where you would think there'd be a lot of interest in baseball. Spring training has been in Florida for 100 years. There's a lot of baseball talent that comes out of Florida. But so far, Major League Baseball has been just a big mess, and it's sort of this blight on Major League Baseball at this point.
What are the reasons that baseball struggles, at least professionally, in Florida?
Well, they're two different situations, Miami and Tampa Bay, and I think people try to conflate them and want to conflate them, but they're not actually the same thing. You know, Miami has been kind of a mess from the beginning. They've had four owners now in 25 years, which is incredible volatility, and there's a lot of distrust from the organization and the fan base who have been burned so many times from owners who have dismantled the team, who have traded away talent, who have not seen interested in putting a competitive team on the field. Plus, there's this whole business with the Marlins Stadium, Marlins Park in Little Havana in Miami. The way that was built has been very controversial in terms of the public money that was taken and used to build it, and that has really caused a horrible relationship between the Marlins and South Florida. Now you have Derek Jeter and his ownership group in there trying to clean it up. We'll see how that goes. In Tampa Bay, another situation involving a stadium. They desperately need one. Their stadium, Tropicana Field, is generally considered to be the worst, or at least one of the worst stadium situations in baseball. It's in a terrible location in St. Petersburg instead of in Tampa. The traffic's terrible. It's really hard for people in Tampa, which is sort of the centerpiece of the Tampa Bay area, to get to the stadium. They believe to succeed they're going to need a new one in Tampa instead of St. Pete, but there's a lot of questions about whether that'll ever happen.
Wow. What about, you mentioned the story, and I never considered it, transplanted fans from other regions of the country, possibly the Northeast, who just have allegiances elsewhere and are not supporting these teams?
That's been a big problem with all sports in Florida, not just baseball. The fact that so many people who live in Florida aren't from there. Most aren't. Most of them have come with their own sports allegiances from wherever their hometown was. And that's why you see with a lot of Florida sports, big crowds for the visiting team. You know, visiting team fans come and fill up their stadiums. There's a lot of people traveling to Florida. They'll buy tickets to see their team. You see that a lot, especially with football in the middle of the winter, where football fans from the Northeast will fly down to see their team in Miami or Tampa Bay or Jacksonville, even, because it's a chance to escape the cold. So that's been a problem with all sports in Florida, and it's no different for baseball. You go to a Rays game against the Yankees, and it's mostly Yankee fans. It's just the way it's always been. Same with Marlins-Mets games. A lot of Met fans in Marlins Park. Well, not a lot. There's never a lot of people there, but the ones that are, mostly Met fans.
Thanks, Jared. Wall Street Journal national baseball writer Jared Diamond. 13 minutes now in front of the hour. On This Morning, America's First News. When a state ranks among the top 10 in the country for major new and expanded facilities, that's pure growth. When it's tops for four straight years, that's pure Michigan. Long known as a world leader in the automotive industry, Michigan is also a leader in advanced manufacturing, cybersecurity, agribusiness, and aerospace. In fact, CNBC rates Michigan as the most improved state for business. To learn more, visit MichiganBusiness.org. Thanks for spending time with us. Welcome into Friday. NFL teams leave no stone unturned, right, when it comes to scouting top players for the draft. They even know if a player ever stepped out of line in middle school. But there's one very obvious piece of information that teams seem to be changing their tunes on before choosing the players who can make or break a franchise: their birth certificates. In last week's NFL draft, 538.com says 17 of the 32 players selected in the first round will be age 21 or younger on September 1st, right about when their rookie season will begin. This is the highest number this century. It's the continuation of a trend, too. What caused such a dramatic change? The rookie wage scale instituted with the 2012 draft, which gives first-round selections a fixed four-year deal based on where they ended up in the draft, plus a club option for a fifth year. So more pro prospects now want to get into the NFL as quickly as possible and set the clock in motion for their second contract where they can make the most money. The number of younger players declaring as underclassmen has increased dramatically ever since. 8 minutes now in front of the hour on This Morning. Jennifer Koshenka is back with more of America's First News.
Gordon, Hawaii's Kilauea volcano has erupted, sending lava shooting into the air in a residential neighborhood and prompting mandatory evacuation orders for nearby homes. Hawaii County says steam and lava poured out of a crack in Leilani Estates. Michael Poland is a volcano scientist.
These lava flows, they're like bulldozers. They don't really stop for anything in their path. So houses, agriculture, roads, power lines, and so forth are going to be consumed by this flow and destroyed.
The footage shows lava spurting into the sky from a crack in a road, while aerial drone footage shows a line of lava snaking through a forest. White House Press Secretary Sarah Sanders is facing a barrage of questions about whether she purposely misled the American people amid fallout over Rudy Giuliani's stunning revelation about hush money paid by President Trump's lawyer to a porn actress who alleges a tryst with Trump. Sanders was questioned why the White House failed to disclose that Trump had reimbursed his lawyer to keep Stormy Daniels quiet.
As Mayor Giuliani stated, this wasn't something that was initially known, but later learned. And again, we give the best information possible at the time, and we're going to continue to do that every single day.
Sanders says she learned of the payment from Giuliani's interview Wednesday night. More than two dozen additional women have come forward with sexual misconduct charges against Charlie Rose. The Washington Post says on three occasions that CBS managers were alerted to Rose's questionable behavior, CBS has contended it did not know of Rose's behavior until the original Post story that led to his firing last November. State lawmakers in Kansas and Oklahoma have approved legislation to grant legal protections to faith-based adoption agencies that cite their religious beliefs for not placing children in LGBT homes. Supporters of such measures argue that the core issue is protecting a group's rights to live out its religious faith, while critics see them as attacks on LGBT rights. If you're going to steal something, don't leave your fingerprints in Play-Doh. Police in Massachusetts were able to chase down a shoplifter who left a fingerprint in a hunk of Play-Doh after an employee found several electronic anti-theft devices covered in Play-Doh in an attempt to neutralize them. Police used a forensics lab to match the print to the suspect.
That's poor preparation right there.
I know.
Very poor. Thank you, Jen. 6 minutes now in front of the hour on This Morning, America's First News. Thanks for being with us. U.S. cheesemakers are in a situation where they can't call many of their popular cheeses by their common names anymore when selling them in many markets outside the U.S. The Sartori Company cheese factory in Plymouth, Wisconsin, has been making Asiago, Parmesan, and other popular cheeses, according to European recipes, for decades and recently began exporting them. Last year, for export versions of those two cheeses, Sartori had to trademark new names, according to the Wall Street Journal, leading to the birth of Sartiago and Sarmesan. As you might imagine, sales are low. Problem here, Sartori is wedged into this corner because of European Union treaties that expand the reach of long-standing European practices of restricting the use of commonly used cheese names to just the products made in the region of origin. For Jennifer Koschenka, I'm Gordon Deal. Thanks for listening to This Morning, America's First News.